What is up, internet? Welcome to Self-Defense from All Angles, the podcast where we try to break the echo chamber around self-defense and self-protection. I'm your host, Randy King, speaker on all things proactive skills and owner and operator of 80-20 Conflict Management Strategies. This week, we have my former boxing coach, PJ Luhanga. PJ is a fascinating character, and his take on boxing is by far one of my favorite takes on boxing. I highly recommend you follow him. Don't forget, at the end of the show, we'll give out a whole bunch of social media stuff. He is a high-level boxing nerd, and I say that with all the compliments I can possibly say it. He is one of my favorite people to bounce ideas off of, and we have a great conversation around a whole bunch of topics. First off, we talk about people getting started in boxing and some of the common hurdles that people have to jump over in order to begin their journey. We talk about boxing in a couple of different ways. Like, number one, is it better for self-defense than maybe some other arts? And also, does boxing, because of the tools that are chosen, have inherently more longevity in it because people can practice it for much longer? And then, of course, as always, on Patreon, we have the one-up story where PJ tells us a story where he had to de-escalate a situation while he was a coach. This is a different take on de-escalation. Normally, it's somebody in a place of power, and I guess a coach is a little bit, but this came in a gym where a lot of people think that there isn't any beefs. There clearly is in a lot of cases. So PJ walks out a time where he needed to de-escalate as a coach to fighters, and it is a great story. So as always, of course, jump over to patreon.com, help support the show. We greatly appreciate it. Lowest level, $5 to $7 you're paying per month, and you're getting all the extra content, plus a vlog, plus access to extra stuff, including parts of the tour. And don't forget, if you're looking for a speaker to talk on proactive self-protection skills or someone to come into your workplace and help train your staff on the realities of workplace violence, don't forget to get a hold of us at 8020cms.com. Now let's get on to the show. What is up, everybody? So today, for the first time on this show, he has been on one of my shows before, but for the first time on this show, we have PJ Luhanga. PJ, why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Hey, everybody. My name is PJ. I have been living in Canada for probably well over 10 years at this point. Currently a boxing coach, but I've also been training in boxing and Muay Thai for over 10 years at this point, coaching for over six. Just been mostly working with that. Obviously, I have my office job at the time, but otherwise, my main passions are usually about training and coaching and helping people out. Usually for especially to make people understand that martial arts isn't really that complicated as you think. It's more straightforward as long as you just translate to things you do every day.
That's awesome. We're going to walk that out later on here. But the first question we always ask everybody on the show is, what is your definition of self-defense? The term is so fluid that everybody has a different definition of it. So what do you consider self-defense?
I would also say it's probably a bias of like conversations we've had before, but it's usually just sure. A case of awareness of what's going on around you, awareness of the situation, and trying your best not to be caught off guard. It obviously comes at different levels of it, but it's just like the ability to read the room as well as like be aware of how you're reacting to things, knowing what your gut reaction is versus how you're going to act on it. Because obviously when the adrenaline hits, you'll probably freeze at first. Sure. Then it's also a case of like maybe over time, you'll eventually know what to do or do things unconsciously. But in my case, self-defense is just being aware and knowing and having something pre-planned in your head to act.
The next thing we always ask is, what is something you wish more people knew about what you do and like the circumstances around it? So you are both an IT manager and you are a boxing coach, correct?
I wouldn't say manager. I'm a senior IT analyst, but that's about it.
I don't know what that means. So he's a thing with computers. So you have two arguably different worlds that you play in, right?
Yes.
And I would assume the skills you have in one don't always play to the other side. So let's start talking about boxing because that's your passion. I love what you said, which is martial arts is not as complicated as you think. Do you want to walk that out a little bit?
Yes. So a lot of times, especially just because of how you see things on TV to see how people are. There's a couple of things that people kind of miss. Some things are exaggerated for entertainment purposes, or some things you're seeing the people who've already put years into it. It gives a general barrier that people think, oh, I can't do this, or I need to be this level of fitness to get started into it. The reality is, it's just like, it has all walks of life. It really is just a case of just get started. Don't try and think that you're going to get everything done immediately. Otherwise, it's no different than like working on like a bigger project. If you take it as the bigger project as a whole, you'll get overwhelmed instead of saying like, okay, today, what little thing can I do here? Today, the next day, what little thing I could do there? A lot of times, which I will run into with some people who are new, is maybe especially for the people who have been more enthusiastic, maybe after the first session, it's like, so how do you think I did? I'm like, you just started, man. There's not going to be like an immediate assessment. You need to put time into it. And the other thing too, is like, when it comes to chipping away at something, it's very hard for you yourself to notice when you're in it. People usually around you will be able to notice the changes along.
There's a couple of things in there you said that I think are really important. And something that I like to harp on about, because that's what I do, I harp, is that bars for entry in training are a problem, both the ones that actually exist and the ones that people make up in their head. Right. Yes. So there's already so many reasons not to do stuff. People have excuses all the time. And I think one of the best lessons, or one of the best things you can learn, is if somebody's going to tell you no, don't let it be yourself. Right. Yeah. You don't say no to yourself. Let other people tell you no. So if you think that you're too old for boxing and you go to a boxing gym, let them tell you you're too old for it. Don't talk yourself out of this already. So with that in mind, PJ, what do you think are some of the most common objections or bars for entry that come from the people before they even get to you? What do you think people, the listeners specifically, they are saying in their heads that are stopping them from pursuing some kind of physical training?
Most common one is, I'm not fit enough, or it looks really tough, or, you know, in some cases, depending which gyms you go to, people can look intimidating, especially when it's just there. The other thing too is, because it's a gym and it's an open area, people are looking at me and judging me. So they're thinking like, oh, I don't want to look silly in front of like all these people I don't know. The other thing too is just a case of like, well, I'm not too sure if I can really commit to it. Or it's just like, you know, I had a previous injury at some point. Mm-hmm. Or maybe I'm like, oh, maybe I can't move a certain way of things. Or maybe I have some kind of like little thing or injury or something that's there before they even try and ask somebody, how can I go about with it? So it's usually one of the things that's just like, they see the door and things like that. And also, like I said, what if they've seen in a movie or maybe even like a fight that's been posted, they're like, I can't do that. Especially for the people who are like really jacked, they're like, oh, I can't be that build.
Right. And in your experience as a coach, I would assume all boxers don't look the same.
No.
Right.
No. Even people in the same weight division will look entirely drastically differently. I'm in a similar weight division, but that's just because I call myself what they call a burger weight. I'm not actually in the weight I used to be back in the day. But if you see people who are within our range of weight, we all look drastically different.
Exactly. And I think that's super important. A lot of people are judging themselves by like the Tysons and the Holyfields and the, let's use a more recent boxer, maybe that's a little bit more relevant.
Anthony Joshua
or Canelo or whoever, yep. Right? They look at them and they say, I can't be like that. I've tried this before, right? Maybe I can't do it. What are the benefits of boxing outside of competing in a ring?
The benefits of boxing is the overall full body workout. A lot of times when people think about boxing, it's just, oh, I'm just using my hands, or it's just mostly upper body. When you eventually take a look into the basics or some of the routines into it, it's a full body workout. Right. You need to know how to balance yourself. You need to know how to move your feet. You need to know your coordination. You need to know how like your core strength works, your breathing and everything else like that. So sometimes some things that people have actually done, maybe when they were younger, ties into boxing, jumping rope, right, going for a walk, running, even just simple things like lifting and moving things around. That's no different than squats, or just like pushing something around, push-ups, or any of those things, lunges, things that you would do normally every other day. There are things that boxing involves with it too. It's just in a more concentrated manner. So it's more singled out.
So, and this is part of your approach, and it's not as complicated as people think, because there is overlapping patterns. Like, so you work with myself and my daughter for a bit, and my daughter's footwork was decent because she skipped rope, right? She did a bunch of jump rope. And so there's lots of, would you say there's lots of overlapping skill sets from other sports that can help you function better in boxing?
Yes, there is a ton of overlap. Boxing was what one friend of mine would say. He says like it's like a nice good core or center to start with if you want to branch out to the other martial arts, because right, the general footwork's the same for most striking. Even in like grappling, you need to know where your base is, you need to know where like your stance is and everything else like that. If you're off balance or your feet in the wrong spot, you're in trouble. Say no idea when you're jumping rope, you need to know how to be, obviously you'll start over jumping, and then over time you'll just be barely off the ground, which is the ideal thing to do. It's just one of those little hand-eye coordination things that people kind of just miss along the way.
That makes total sense. As for longevity, so yes, boxing is a full body workout, but it's not a full body range of motion mobility workout. Do you think that people can train in boxing longer than other arts? Like where jujitsu, you need your hips really open all the time, or kickbox, you have to be able to kick high, where boxing, because the hands are the primary tool, do you find it's an easier access point for people who maybe haven't done anything before?
I would say so, because a lot of the stretching routines and also some of the warm-ups and workouts can actually tie into those. Like, there are some people who I work with, they'll tell me they have hip problems, and I'll show them like stretching routines and things that I picked up along the way to be like, hey, you still need to do this because the rotation is still there. Knowing right. how to step around is still there. There's a lot of little things. So if your hips are tight, you're going to run into problems moving around in boxing as well. Otherwise, you're just going to be, you're banking on somebody just standing still with you, or right. you're banking on hitting a heavy bag that doesn't move. When you deal with somebody who actually just walks around you, you're going to realize, oh, wait, I need to move and things, all that kind of stuff. I would say that depending on like what people are like more intrigued into, they would probably look into things like where jiu-jitsu is like, okay, grabbing clothes, you're on the ground, things like that. That would be one thing that would draw to people for that. Whereas in boxing, it's kind of like, do I really want to just like punch out people? Not necessarily. It's just right. like some of the things that people miss is just like the little other things in within it that can also help out with the other sports.
What do you think are some of the biggest myths surrounding boxing and boxing training?
I guess one of the most hilarious ones is, and it's more of just like an overtime thing. They don't expect most people, or at least most people, when they talk to think about boxers, they sound punchy, or they might not be the brightest out there. It's just like, it just really depends on like what people are talking about. And it's also a case of just generational. Over time, it's just more people are aware of safety and longevity in the sport. So you're going to see more people who have more of their faculties in check because they just took into consideration, okay, there's times I need to take a break, or it's times where I just have to stop. But otherwise, if you ask them about like the sport that they do, they may not be the best at maybe conveying it, but you'll get a lot of info and like gems from people, especially if they've been in that sport long enough, or right. insider stories. That would be one of them. The other one is just because of where most boxing gyms are located, it's kind of, some of them are kind of in roughish looking areas.
Sure.
So they don't really know who's going to be in there, but that's also like one of the benefits of boxing.
Right.
All walks of life come in there. So it's just like, you'll see the person from maybe a well-off background. You're going to see somebody from a not well-off background. They're going to just be, as long as they both want to do the same thing, you'll probably be good friends because of it.
That makes total sense. There is an argument out there, which I think is kind of interesting. I love these debates and thought processes of, if you want to know what arts work, look at the gyms in the ghetto. You're never going to see a Krav Maga gym in a lower socioeconomic area because the price is too high, et cetera. Right. So while I think there's some holes in it, it's something to think about, because you're going to see a wrestling gym in a lower income area. You're going to see a box gym for sure. Like, guaranteed. It's a lot of what people's way out. You're going to see some MMA gyms like that now. So I think it's funny. The other thing I wanted to talk about was the punchy thing. You said you did Thai boxing. Thai boxers fight 300-400 fights full contact. They go crazy, right? Like, not all the time, but 100. Yeah. 100 is not unheard of. And then those people go on to become doctors and lawyers and senators and stuff, right? And they don't have that punchy effect. While we do see a lot of the punchiness in boxing, where do you think that comes from? Like, why the difference?
I would also say, like, for the first part, where it's just like the excess amount of fights that the people have, it depends on which part of the world you're trading in. If you're in a place where like fights are readily available, you can easily rack up that many fights. There's some places like out here in Canada where it's kind of like sparse.
Yeah.
You're only going to get so many, and then you'll have so many amateurs, you'll keep running into the same guys. That's you'll right. go pro, and then unless you go outside the country, you'll probably run to the same guys again.
Right.
So your fight record varies, especially when it comes to Muay Thai. It's just because the targets are different. In Muay Thai, leg kicks are usually one of the key finishers, or knee strikes, or like something to the body. If it's an elbow or something like that, it's more likely going to cause a gash or a cut that's going to make it like have to fight to stop. There are going to be some punchy people in Muay Thai. It just depends on the style of Muay Thai they were taught. Some are taught more like they just take it and give it. Some are taught to be more evasive. Some, over time, because they became more experienced, they know how to stall you out, because for a lot of them, they need to fight maybe every other week or every week. So a lot of times their tactics will be more of like play outside, push around, just get sneaking points here and there, so they can get into the next fight right away. If it's like a championship fight, then yeah, they'll go about with it. Because if you talk to anybody out here where they do like pro level rules Muay Thai, they just don't have the shin guards. If they were just going at it, was it like a banger, probably both of them won't be able to walk properly for 3 weeks before they can start training again, because it's shin on shin hurts. So it's just like the targets are different, and going after somebody's leg is easier than going after somebody's head.
So same kind of argument people use for MMA, right? Is there's multiple options other than just trying to knock somebody out through concussive damage, right? You can wrestle, you can put them on the ground, you can submit them. What I kind of want to lean towards, though, is the training style between Western and Eastern seems to be, and I literally mean that as in on the map. So like North America versus Europe and other countries, is the North Americans tend to hard spar a lot more. They tend to go harder. They tend to do a lot of stuff in training that replicates fights, where you can argue this with wrestling as well. There's the Russian wrestling team. They do 5-hour practices 5 days a week, but they're not like a North American wrestling practice, right? It's lots of play, lots of rest, lots of moving around, lots of whatever. The argument is in boxing, and MMA had this for a bit, and people are going away from it, and I kind of want your thoughts on this, is there isn't any need to go full force in your training camp because that's, you're saving that for the fight. And Thai boxing tends to not do full contact until the actual fight happens. And this is why people are arguing that they can do more professional fights. A, like you said, there are people that are there, like there's more options, but also like they're only getting potentially knocked out in fights every couple of months, as opposed to weekly. So same amount of brain issues, but it's a much longer over the career if you're not doing that in your training. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, hard sparring is definitely something that is a divisive point up here. So it's just a case of like, so I think it's just one of the cases, just like, it depends on like what generation of training you came from or where exactly you originally started with. A lot of times it's like the case for the hard sparring is sometimes because people can only train like maybe 2 times a week or maybe 3 times at most. So they got to like make the most of it and things like that. Sometimes it also just depends on like the skill gap between the two sparring partners who are training with each other and like their own self-control. It also is just a generational thing too. It just depends like what generation of fighters did you come from. If you were there when like during like the earlier UFC, things like that, you're gonna think like, yo, I just gotta go hard all the time. Then over time you're gonna be like, all right, those guys are looking a little punchy, but you'll know exactly why. And some people even look back and be like, yeah, I wish I kind of didn't do that, right? So then a lot of those guys who came from that, and maybe they're instructors now, they're saying like, well, I already know when's a good time for you to decide to go harder and but not to. That's where it's just a case of it. And because of like other places where they can spend hours of training, they already know like the results of burnout. So they're just going to tell them like, just ease yourself along with it, ease yourself along with it. A lot of times it's depending where you are, how often can you get a fight? For some people, they can get a fight every other week. Some places you might get a fight every couple months if you're lucky.
Right.
And that's like, you know, maybe your opponent pulled out or something like that, an injury or something like that. Now you got to wait another couple months again and then another couple months again. So for some people, like, you know, so they don't like lose like that edge they have, they're ready to go harder. And it's just more of a case of like, sure, but do you have training partners who are at the same caliber as you? I don't mind guys going hard with each other as long as they have the defense for it.
Right.
If you have the defense to neutralize it, then it's fine.
Right.
But if one person clearly doesn't have the defense for it, then no, it has to be in control in some manner. And then it's also a case of like the size difference between the training partners. Not everybody has the option of having everybody the same size. And a lot of the cases where it's like a smaller guy versus a clearly a bigger guy, they don't realize the bigger guy is going light. It's just for the smaller guy, it feels like life or death.
Yeah.
And then they want to respond in kind.
Well, and there's a reason why the like heavyweight fights have so many more knockouts than almost every other division, right? Because it's just the weight and the mass. And as a big-
And fatigue.
And fatigue, true. As a big guy, I've always been a big guy. Even when I was in shape, I was still a big guy. I get it, right? Like there's lots of times where I thought I was hitting light. They're like, you're hitting way too hard. I'm like, oh, I don't know if I can go lighter than this. Like just turning my body generates this force, not even throwing anything into it. What made you take your focus away from Thai boxing and redirect your attention to boxing? Why is that what you coach now?
It was actually what I wanted to do in the first place. It was just the first gym I went to that a friend of mine convinced me to go to. He just says like, yeah, we have boxing in there as well. So I was like, sure, why not? And it was actually a Muay Thai gym. They just have like, there's months where they just focus on boxing. I was just like, oh, whatever. I'm with my friend. And, you know, like Muay Thai is kind of fun. You know, I'm moving my legs in a different way and things like that. Boxing was always still sitting in the back of my head. It was just a case of when it was available. And then during the first couple months, one of the fighters there was telling me, he's like, hey, you got long arms. You should work in your boxing. Use it. So I was just like, yeah, I do. But depending on the month we're doing, like, we don't really focus on boxing much.
Right.
And then at the time, I was working near Panther Gym. And that's why I was just like, I'll go to Panther Gym to work on my boxing while I do that at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so I was training both of them along the way. And then there was a point I got laid off. So I couldn't afford to be at the Muay Thai gym. But Panther Gym said, like, hey, you already know Muay Thai. If you teach the kickboxing class, we'll let you come in for free. I'm like, I'll do it. And then along the ways, if I was helping out with other stuff like that, Benny would also just be like a mini one-on-one, like towards the end of the night.
Right.
So I was just like, this is fine for me. I'm like, while I'm waiting to find another job, I can still do this.
That's awesome. How do you feel boxing stacks up as a self-defense art? So not for a professional, not for whatever, but like you are in the street. It has to go physical, right? No proactive skills of work. Where would you put boxing on that list?
It's a little bit tricky for me because I do understand there's some factors where you have to know how to adjust it for that kind of a street situation, where it's just like your knuckles are, you know, your hands are brittle and they are pretty easy to break or potentially injure. The one thing I would say is like, it's really good in the sense of like knowing your spacing and knowing where to move around. And I'd also say it's just like in most of the cases of the self-defense situation, if you can't run. So a lot of times like the card you have, get out of there. But you know, worst comes to worst, at least if you know how to position yourself and know how to strike somewhere, right, you can go for certain parts. And it really just depends like how much you've trained in it. If you only like just like bashed away at the bag and things like that, you can only do so much. But otherwise, if you've taken time to like work on like specific shots or hit specific areas, and then maybe you try and think like, okay, if I try this on the bag without gloves on, I try with palms and things like that, then it could translate to those things. I'm not really too sure. I would put it like more like in a middle-ish area, because it really just goes up or down depending on like how you train.
So I had a whole discussion on our TikTok channel at Defense Talks with Dad. I defended somebody saying that palm strikes are just statistically safer than punches in the street. But as a guy who bounced and I've never broken my hand on somebody's head before, and I punched definitely more than one person, there is a benefit. Now, I put boxing actually pretty high up on the self-defense scale for physical skills. The reason why is, like you said, boxing is a great place for us to bolt other stuff onto, right? Because it's your hands, you have a focus, it teaches you head movement. Most street fights are headhunters. Most people just swing for the head. So if you can block that, it's really good. The other thing, you talked about spacing, but the base and the footwork, I think, are exceptional because, for example, we live in Canada. It gets icy out there sometimes. If you're kicking and throwing and like going for other things, I think the
slip is going to happen.
Exactly. Also, the cardio you mentioned, if you can't get away, which obviously you should, that's the number one thing you should do, right? Is create distance. Most street fights last 30 seconds to a minute and a half tops. So if you can go three rounds and just move around, you're going to tire out most drunk people showing off in front of their friends. So if you can move your head, block, maybe throw a counter shot, maybe like a light, even keep away with a smart, intelligent jab, as you like to talk about all the time, that's going to make a big difference. I think the adaptation for boxing to street fighting is one of the least amount of adaptations you have to make, right? So
yeah, it's probably most straightforward because that's what you almost see. People use their interpretation of boxing.
Yeah, in my opinion, that's why, like, when I was working with you, we did it. And myself and Ryan, because I'm moving after the wedding, we're moving to South Side. So we're actually to come train at Kingdom with you guys. That's the plan, me and Ryan. So, but that's why I like boxing so much, because one, it's hands and hips, obviously. But like, if you have a bad knee, you don't have to put your weight on that one knee to throw a kick. Your instinct isn't to go to the ground, which isn't necessarily bad, but it's not that beneficial. And again, I'm not saying this. You know what? Add hate comments. It bumps the algorithm. But to be clear, there are lots of different arts that do transport. Like, people pick on BJJ. It's very effective for self-defense. I just think the one that has little need to adapt is boxing, because especially if you're punching the body. Oh, I have a bouncer friend. That's all he did. He was a Golden Gloves heavyweight, I think, or something. Big deal. Yeah. And all he would do was one to the liver, one to the spleen. Every drunk person, that was it. Nobody did anything else. 260 pounds. He had like big bear paws, thump, thump, upward at 45 degree angle to ribs. That ended almost everything. Yeah. So,
or at least guaranteed to make them throw up.
Exactly. They definitely weren't causing the problem they were currently causing anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
The problem might have switched to a mop bucket, but that's true. So we've kind of talked about like boxing as a whole. Mm. The mental game in boxing, does it build up mental resilience in the same way other sports do?
Yes. Yes, it does. It really does, especially depending on like your team and who you're working with.
Right.
If they can put you in like different like tough situations, especially if it's something that you're not familiar with. So obviously, because you already know about me, the whole thing, I like working up close at the dirty boxing. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have personal space issues. That's already an issue right away. That's somebody's just right on top of you like that. You can't get away. And you'd be like, I need this person off me. I need room to breathe. That's right. One of those scenarios. The other case is just that feeling of, I can't do anything with the person in front of me. Because obviously in like all combat sports, I should say, you're going to run to the one person who just takes a good shot to the face and they keep going.
Right.
And that can be draining for somebody. Especially, or somebody who's in front of you, they feel like they're there, but you miss either way, but they haven't hit you yet, but they're letting you know that I can still get you. There's all kinds of like little mental scenarios and things like that. Especially where some people say like, oh, this guy's running, this guy's moving around. I'm like, try and see if you can cut off a guy who actually knows how to move around the ring. You will get frustrated and you'll do something stupid. And that's also mentally tiring too. There's that like all little things that will like, you don't think about it until you're in that situation.
That makes a ton of sense. One of the biggest issues people have with boxing, and maybe this is going away, but this is a very common thing I hear, is most boxing gyms, if you're not going to compete, aren't going to treat you as a serious person to train in their sphere because they're focusing on fighting. People say this about wrestling too. If you're not going to compete on the wrestling team, it's hard to find a gym where they'll just teach you wrestling. Do you have any tips for people how they could because I don't think you need to compete in boxing to get benefits from boxing. So tips for people just obviously outside the city, right? That can't come and work with you. What should they, or how can they approach a box if they want to do boxing, but they don't want to compete?
It might be a case of like actually sit down with the trainer and see like what can be done. Because it's one thing for you to just like, you know, be kind of like iffy about it and things like that. Depending on the trainer, they might be on the straightforward thing and be like, okay, I'm looking purely for fitness and things like that. But the thing is like, you don't have to compete, but if you can be a training partner for the people who do compete, that would also help. You don't have to compete to be a good training partner, or sparring partner.
Right.
The coach doesn't have time to hold mitts for everybody. The coach doesn't have time to do like drills for everybody, especially if they have a large enough team. Right. It should be a case of like partner drills should be par for the course. We have guys in our fight team sparring, but they're not planning to compete. They just spar. And they just like work alongside with us. Obviously, like somebody, the first time they go into a fight team sparring, it's a bit of a jump, but then they realize, okay, the fight team's actually fairly gentle with everybody. Right. It's just a case of like you spend more time developing your skills than going for it. Obviously, you'll be warned if like, hey, we're in fight season, there's a fight coming up. Yeah. If you don't want to go with that, do not partner with that person. And we'll tell them right away, like you don't partner with them, you don't have to. Right. And then it's also for the case of like really wide weight differences. Okay, the smaller guys are here, the real big boys are here. Don't bother with the big boys if you're really small and vice versa. And then for those of us who are considered the middle, it's just like, well, you can pick whoever you want, but if the big boys want you, you got no choice.
Fair enough. So you're saying they should just go there and talk to them, obviously, right? So
like, I would say at least start a conversation, just see, at least see what you're dealing with.
Right. Because like I said, I recommend boxing to a lot of people. I think not enough people get hit in the face anymore. And I'm not saying hit in the face all the time, but you need to know it's not as bad as you think it is and you can survive it. I'm not saying it's great, but I'm saying you're not made of glass. People need to learn this stuff. And too many people, like Mike Tyson said, are getting a little too used to not having any blowback. Criminals are not getting softer. Society is getting softer. So you need to, in some occasions, pay attention to what is going on, right? Yeah. If you live in a place where there's zero tolerance policies for your kids to learn the rules of violence in a elementary scene, they might get into a fight in a bar. If they don't know what it's like to get hit in the face, they might overreact and they might come back with friends or weapons or whatever, right? Because they got punked and they don't know what's going on. Yeah. So I always try to guide people towards boxing in that, you know, at least do it for 6 months. Get punched in the face. You don't like it. Join another gym. It's fine. But just know what that's like, because it'll help you just in general. But like I said, the biggest bar for entry I always get back is I want to join a gym, but they're not really training us unless we're going to the fight team, or they're not really focusing on it, because the business models for a lot of gyms is make money off the fighters. So we're trying to make everybody fighters, right?
Yeah, it really depends on the gym and things like that. There are some people who still have that kind of mindset of like, if you're not planning to compete, they will kind of like wayside you and things like that. But it's just a case of like what kind of mentality some people are coming from.
Right.
It's also especially it's like maybe this might be a slightly old school coach. Maybe they found that golden goose. Obviously, their attention is going to just focus on that person right away. It's just a case of like, how many trainers do they have to specialize in certain things? Right. They can have the coach who focuses on the fighters, but what's wrong with having the coach who just like, hey, I'm here to help you guys with fitness. Hey, you guys are overall generals and things like that. It's just a case of like, what are you looking to do and everything else like that. I can understand it can be extremely discouraging, because some people feel like, well, I'm not competing, so you can clearly tell the focus is on this. It'll just make me hit the bag all day, or just make me do jump rope all day, which is very understandable. It's still present. Like, it hasn't gone away. It's still going to be around for a while. As long as there's like somebody who just knows like the fight game, things like that, then maybe they're not the best at explaining it in the way for a regular everyday person.
Right.
There's always going to be that kind of disconnect. So usually like, just talk with your trainer and see, at least get an idea of what they're thinking.
Pretty much what happens, and you just said it, is you hit the bag, you do skip rope. So pretty much becomes cardio kickboxing. How beneficial are these cardio kickboxing classes to the actual sport of boxing?
It serves a purpose, but it's really extremely limited. It's going to be one of two things. You're just going to do that for just getting the sweat, or you're going to feel like, okay, this feels limited. I want to find more.
Right.
So it's a case of like, if you want to find more, you'll branch out and look around more, which I think is beneficial for the actual like full out to whatever boxing gyms. Sure. Obviously, it's a mixed bag of like the cardio places. But like I said, it serves a purpose. It might give some people the wrong sense of like they may know about boxing.
Right.
It does come down to that thing. Like, if you haven't been punched in the face, then you don't really know what it's like. I've told people in my class multiple times, I'm like, there is a natural reaction or aversion. You want to look away and close your eyes. I said the best way to deal with being afraid of getting punched in the face is get punched in the face.
Yep.
When you realize your head doesn't explode, you'll realize it's not bad. It's not great, but it's not bad. Eventually, you'll know where if you're going to get punched in the face, you'd rather get hit before hit than anywhere south of it. So it's just like, even when I know that because a lot of people like partner with the same people all the time. Yeah. I'm like, your partner's your friend. Be a friend and punch them in the face.
Well, and I think that makes sense because, like, also just for reference, everyone, the not turning away and flinching also goes away. Again, I've been in a Street Fighter 2. I didn't flinch. And when I started boxing, I was flinching again. I'm like, what am I doing? All of a sudden, my old reflexes went back to just, right? Yeah. So we need to keep that consistent habit of training. So I like to compare cardio kickboxing to like Jake and Logan Paul. It's bringing awareness to the sport, but I don't know how much it's beneficial to it. There's more kids signing up for boxing right now because of the Paul brothers than almost any other reason, which is good for the sport, but it doesn't mean that's where we should stay, right?
No, it's just a case of like, because now there's a new influx of people. It's really just a case of like, for all those gyms that are taking these people, now's the time to see like, what can you do with it? What can you do to adjust to capitalize with it? Because you now know what maybe where the attention is focused on, things like that. Yeah. And be like, okay, you want to be something like that. You also got to remember like what you see in the highlight reels. They're not showing you how much they had to bust their ass to get there. So there's one thing I would say about it, especially for Jake at the least between the two, you can see he puts the work. Results vary, but otherwise he's working, and they've shown clips of him just getting like messed up in sparring. So it's just a case of like, he is putting in the work. It's just in the pro game, you will have the sparring partners who will give you work. And then there's the ones you just more or less there to get beat up.
I agree. I have the two of them. Not that I want to talk about these guys too much, but I can now put them in the hashtag for this video. The Jake is definitely the more serious of them. He's the boxer for sure.
Yeah.
Like Logan's exhibitionist, he'll do whatever. But I do think Jake Paul might do something with a boxing career of some sort. All right, cool. I think that's everything I wanted to cover talk with you today, PJ. Thanks for your time. As always, we're gonna do the one-up story. The one-up story being, what's the story you tell to be the coolest person at the table? That will be on Patreon, patreon.com/RandyKingLive. Every other podcast I've ever done exists there. So if you want that stuff, because we're pulling down all the old servers for the new build, it's all going to exist there. It's going to exist there forever. I've independently put it up there. Even Talking to Savage is there. So if you want to hear that, go there. European tour coming up. We're doing 6 countries, 12 dates. That's all on the website. Just check that out. I'm not going to list them. It's too much stuff. PJ, where can the people find you?
You can primarily find me on my Instagram, PJCLuhanga, PJCLuhanga. You'll see usual snippets of like either something I'm breaking down or things that I do in class. And sometimes I'll be doing highlights of things that I'm talking about or about to work on. Other way you can find me is a podcast that I am part of. It's ringgangradio.com. I do pop up primarily on the eye test, which is more of a focus on the technical aspects of combat sports with my co-host Shutterworth. We do focus on the more serious side of it, but because we're the kind of people, if we're in the same room, jokes will start flying. So if you like a bit of both, it'll be a good time. Otherwise, outside that, those would be the social media ways to contact me. PJCLuhanga at Instagram is the easiest way to reach me.
So that's how I talk to PJ. That's why we booked this show, was on Instagram. So I would recommend that be the way you go. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for your time. Don't forget, if you're looking for a speaker for your events or workplace workshops, that's what I do. We talk violence in a realistic way, proactive skills over physical skills. It's always the way we go here. Join us on Patreon, and we'll talk to everybody next week.